SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at the races. A buzz of activity, and it's kind of one of these intersections where you've got any number of people that are wrapping up from the morning, and then you've got people that are showing up for the race day, and that includes Hammer and Jimmy Ventura, and they're going to join us. In fact, sit down right now, and we'll get Jimmy in here. And Hammer had a particularly for him, you know how much the music means to him, and he had a chance last night to see Springsteen on Broadway, and I know we're going to hear about that as Hammer sits down, and you got props? You got
yes.
You got
props.
Yeah.
We got props. Oh,
you got overnights. There you go.
How's it going, buddy?
Well, now it's strictly a sprint. The next couple of hours of handicapping, full time. We took care of some of the some of those preliminaries, as it were, and we can focus on what matters most. And first of all, obviously, you had a spectacular time at Springsteen last night.
I got to tell you, it was epic. It was, I was coming to the Belmont anyway, but, Jimmy called me up and said, I got tickets, and guess what? You can have my ticket. So he let me go with Tara, his girlfriend, and we got to sit in the second row, and I had a little thing. So before I went to see Springsteen, I went to the Met yesterday, and so I can say I saw a bunch of masterpieces yesterday. I saw a Monet, I saw a Rembrandt, and I saw a Springsteen. And I'm hoping to see another one. I'm hoping to see a Justify tomorrow.
The Wonder Horse.
The Wonder Horse, as coined by you guys from early on. And Hammer, I at the time when I made the decision to come not once but twice to Santa Anita, really, we didn't know. I mean, he'd already broken his maiden, but around the same time, I said, you know what, I'm going to go for a big cap day, but I think I'm coming back for Santa Anita Derby, because it felt like at the time McKenzie and Voltoro were going to be the story, and we can see how it's turned out.
Well, as you know, for both of those, he raced the day after, the Sunday, right?
Yes.
After the San Felipe, and you decided to stay the extra day, and had the race in the book, Baffert pulled the old, look over here at Sunland Park and dipped into that race, which I really, truly didn't know he was going. People, oh, you said that. I said, I didn't know. The race is there. The race has always been there. And then, lo and behold, I still think to this day, somehow or another, he was always going to run the Santa Anita Derby. Unfortunately, it took a McKenzie to get hurt for that to happen, but I had no question that that's where he was going to run. And then you came out and saw him there. And I always think back to that race and how unimpressive it was. And, he just went wire to wire. But people forget, that was the all-in race. If he doesn't win that race,
that's true.
He's not going to the Derby. He's not. He might have had enough points if he was second. But, no, Bob, he's not going to go to the Derby with such a lightly raced horse coming off a second place finish in the race before. So he was all in. So if it took doing what he did, going to the front and kind of, not quote looking as impressive as maybe he has, that was his all in race. And after that, like I said, we've been kind of just in the haze watching. I mean, he came out of the fog and of course he was in front. What do you expect?
Luckily, we were on him early, and I made a future wager on him that Sunday that he ran. We got down right at the same time, as well as I went all in to a degree where I actually bet him in the future in the Triple Crown, so I'm live there. So not only am I invested as a gambler, but I am a huge fan of this horse. He's just he's brought back that childhood spirit of watching Secretariat do something, and he's spectacular. He's the show. He's the show. No two ways about it.
I suppose we can dive right in and handicap Belmont, and then we'll touch on, as we always do, the other high profile events on the card. I've asked everybody the last several days since the draw, really, once we got a feel for where the horses were going to line up. If he is to win, how does it go? And if he gets beat, what happens? How are the two scenarios? What plays out here? Positive and negative.
Well, positive, you mean how does he win on the track?
Yes.
I'm sure he needs to be forwardly placed. I'm sure he will be forwardly placed. I don't see Bob making any drastic changes in the way the horse runs. You watch him go by out here in the morning, as we did this morning. He wants to go. And I don't mean fly and go, but I think he's going to be on or near the lead. I don't think it's especially important that he is in front for the first part of the race. I think he can. He just looks like that horse. He's athletic. He can kind of be placed everywhere, and he can just reel off these eighths of a mile just consistently. And I think that's where his strength is. He just, somewhere along the line, is just going to outrun you.
Mike's going to send him out of the gate to get him in the bridle. And I'd imagine, I think the horse right to his outside is Dale Roman's horse, who comes from behind, right? Is that the two horse maybe in that race? So I think he'll clear if the speed on the outside wants to run with him. I think that he'll try to get on into the two path or three path.
Well, that's Mike's scenario, is usually to come off the rail, get about the two and a half path, and kind of move the
pile out. Yep.
Yeah, right. And Mike, as he did at Pimlico, he has a few mounts that the day of, earlier in the day, so he'll get a feel of where the track is, and if there's any type of inside or outside where he wants to go, and that's the beauty with a horse like this, being on the rail. He's going to have to scooch out of there and get his position.
It's a mile and a half. He has plenty of time to figure out what's going to happen. And I just think he's going to be laying first or second the whole way. He'll get into that beautiful stride, nice cadence. And I know it's horse racing. I've done this a long time as well, and I know anything could happen. However, he's 3-4 lengths better than everybody in this race. And I don't care if it's going a mile and a half uphill on glass, or going 5/8 of a mile on the turf. I think he's just the best.
Barring any trouble, if he doesn't make the lead or he doesn't go to the front around, I don't see this race running a mile and a half without him being in front at some point.
Oh, he could be in front of every step.
He could, he'd be able to go by and make a move at some point and reach the lead. If you say he's going to lose, I say it would be a Smarty Jones type of situation.
Just too many horses that come to him and challenge him repeatedly enough times that leaves him vulnerable late.
Yeah, and it happens right where it did there.
And that Jay Pritman said that earlier. Jay said that he sees only two outcomes, the win from Justify or Hofburg catching him in the late stages.
Those are the other than that's going to beat him. I hear you.
Although I think Andy Beyer was very much disinterested in Hofburg.
Yeah, I think the only one that has I made two future bets, one on Vino Rosso and one on Justify, and I think that those are the two in the Belmont that make the most sense from a sheet perspective, as well as Vino Rosso. Probably he has that one gear to him. I don't think he's going to be making any great move, but he ran a great race in the wood, and I think he'll be my key in the second, third, and fourth slot in Superfectas.
Well, you don't have to go any further than the Pletcher angle in the Belmont. He's really turned this race into his little his backyard playground. He's just figured it out, what it takes to get horses ready to run a mile and a half in June, and he's I don't know his, the numbers exactly, but I know
they're gaudy. They're
right? Outlandish. And he's a neck and a nose or whatever from winning a couple
six.
More.
Yeah, I mean so, it's crazy.
So you know, I don't know how you keep Todd out of the exact trifecta situation.
And that's how. For the in fact, for those of you, the ExpressBet Belmont wagering guide, the revised edition. You know, we used the first edition last week just as a template, and then get all the information out there, and then the final adjustments plus Eddie Olchek and Johnny D with their portion and their plays also added. So get back to ExpressBet to read all the final thoughts. Mine haven't really changed, actually, appreciably. I put Vino as a second and third key with him, and then I want to use the prices. You know, one of the things that the Hofburg equation brought this up last night on the Stats Race Lens webinar. How do you take him? I mean, if people are saying, "Oh, I can't bet Justified 4-5," but you'll bet Hofburg at 4-1.
Right.
That's how is that a palatable number?
Look, I think, but with such a short price with Justify, similar to the Preakness, I keyed a few horses underneath Justify in that super, just singling them hitting a bunch of horses in there. And just hoping that good magic runs off the board so you can catch a big super. Luckily, we did. So I think Kings Justify on top and then having Vino Rosso in the second, third, and fourth position with all. I think it's $54 per slot. And that's for the super.
So, I didn't realize that Hofburg was 9-2 on the.
He's going to be 4-1. I mean, yes, you're going to use him and employ him in your strategy, but
it's the Billy Mott. Billy wouldn't do it
already did that in the Derby.
Exactly.
But the thing that I think people, you know, and I say this Monday through Sunday too, you know, the trip handicapping portion of the equation. Well, Hofburg had all this trouble, and he didn't have all this trouble. He had a real opportunity to go through and didn't. And horses like him come, and of course he's going to have way more room to operate. You know, the assumption, you know, when you get here, things kind of spread out, and you know, he does have more room to operate and won't have to be trying to get through traffic and so forth. But I don't get it. He has to improve. And he very well can. I don't see him as some sort of value key. People say, "Well, I want to have the better price. 4-1 is a better price on." I don't get it.
At no. Vino Rosso at 8-1 here. I mean, that's a value.
No,
that's a little value because you know Justify is going to go. He's not going to be 4-5.
And
he'll be 2-5, 1-5.
He'll be 1-2 or 3-5. There's no doubt.
You also. Need to. Everybody does need to revisit your Belmont charts, and Patch last year, 12-1, Gormley 9-1. The year before, not only did you have the 16-1 winner, which is actually pretty much the typical creator.
Yes.
The everybody's smiling here. That was at the party, but. You had, 8-1 Destin. You had Lanny 12-1. You had Governor Malibu 17-1. Even for Pharaoh, you had Keen Ice 3rd 17-1 and Mubtahij 14-1. For me, Commissioner, a brutal photo loss there, head loss. The Tonalist was 9-1, 28-1 Commissioner, 25-1 Metal Count, and of course, California Chrome 4-5. Off the board. I mean, my point is, you've got repeated evidence in this race of real double digit horses that not just win but run well enough to impact the pay slots. And so I think Free Drop Billy, who I picked third, and I won on the tickets. Restoring Hope, who is arguably best bred for the distance and is going to be 27-1. I just don't understand everybody saying, well, all these things have happened in the Belmont and the Triple Crown Trier gets beat. And so you're going to take the 4-1 second choice? That's your big idea?
Well, if you're thinking about trying to make a play on this and talking about the bombs that can come in the second, third, or fourth slot, that's why if you can get an opinion on the second horse, if you're going to make the commitment and say justifies my key and he wins the race, who do you put in that second, third, or fourth slot? You can catch, again, say Vino runs fourth, and I have him keyed in second, third, and sports spot, and then you get a couple 20-1 shots hitting second and third. That thing's paying money, and that's how you get paid with a 4-5 shot, 2-5 shot. I'm excited. It's Wonder Horse all the time. So, and then talking about, you mentioned a few years back with the bomber of Creator that Bobby bought into. Right before the race, I think 2 days before that race.
He bought in on the backstretch, I think.
Yeah, right. I think right as the gate opened up, I think, is when the payment went through.
He waited until he was 14 lengths back and said, I'll come in now.
So, part of this weekend festivities, starting last night with the Springsteen Show, letting them go, and then obviously Saturday we start off at breakfast where the chef's putting on his show. I know you read off last year the menu that we were having. So, and this year, Rick, Steve's going to make the hit list. So he's going to be enjoying the breakfast celebration in New York City.
That's what I heard.
Looking forward to coming in. That'll be fun. Tina's very excited.
Right. So I sent you the menu. Bobby, I asked him, I said, what's the theme this year? And he went, I think we're going to go Italian. So why he gave us the burrata and all the little...
Very nice.
Yeah,
very nice. So, a little focaccia. And,
that's it.
Knowing your repertoire of food restaurants and menu selection, you're going to love it.
Nice.
Couple things. I did want a couple things before we roll off here. I did want to say a couple more things about that Bruce show. I've been to a ton of shows, and if you never saw Bruce Springsteen in your life, you would go and go, wow, that was pretty good. But as a fan,
I've seen him a number of times.
Having lived in New Jersey and, where he grew up and been to Freehold and Colts Neck and Asbury Park, it was moving.
Wow.
I mean, it was epic. He just solidified his spot on Mount Rushmore with Jerry, Mick, and Paul.
Yeah.
Not even a question.
How about that?
I mean,
the Tonys are this weekend, too, I think. Isn't he up for a Tony?
Yeah.
With the show?
I think he's a storyteller.
Yeah.
He laid it all out. He spilled his guts out to you.
It wasn't a concert.
It was not a concert. It was a show. And he was a poet. I mean, this was phenomenal. So I urge any hardcore, Bruce head to find a way to go see it.
How much longer is he going to be on?
I think it goes through December. I know he's extended a few different times.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, when the tickets become available, they just sell out.
They're selling in blocks every, period.
So every six months.
So that the brokers can't block every seat.
Correct.
Small, intimate. We were lucky to be second row.
Well done.
And I got a fist pump, and Tara got a pick.
Wow.
She's awesome.
He handed her a pick. It was great.
What Rick said to me after the show, he goes, the difference between the Belmont Stakes and this Bruce show, he's like, I didn't know how the Bruce show was going to end, but I feel pretty strongly I know how the Belmont's going to end.
Ah, there you go. There's the harmony.
Right?
Yeah, there's the harmony.
And I heard you mention about John yesterday.
Yeah.
And happy to report, some, every day, of course, after he had his heart attack, and he's at home now. And, his typical John, cool as a cucumber through the whole thing. And we wish him well. And he did dodge a bullet, but he'll do the right thing. I mean, coming out of it. But, we're we're thinking about him all the time. So
absolutely.
So that was very cool to know that before I got on a plane, he was out of the hospital and back home. So that was great.
What about wagering? Do you think we're going to be doing any wagering?
Well, yeah, I don't have to worry about you. You'll be out of control as early as, let's see, what time is the first post? 12:50 today.
Well, yeah, I think that I started with the 6th on Belmont Days because that was the kickoff of the pick 6, I guess. So I was just kind of looking around at some of those races, and it's a tough card, obviously.
I got to be honest. I thought yesterday and today
were tougher.
At least in terms of, I mean, there's lots of horses that can impact.
Right.
But in terms of keying off an obvious winner or a horse to beat, it's very clear. I mean, you go from race to race, and you know, you look at the Manhattan, and there's High Happy and Beach Patrol. You look at the Met. The Met is kind of an open thing, but I've got a fairly strong lean toward Awesome Slough and a little B Jersey. So forth. I mean, I think people will find a comfortable win candidate in every spot. And then you can, you know, you build your tickets from there. Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, just that was my initial reaction. I did this card on Wednesday night, and I wanted to go through it right when it was drawn, Tuesday night. And then I've gone back to it twice. And then I'll do a final, you know, with Mike Welch. By the way, for those of you looking for the Clocker Report, it did post for yesterday for today. So it's up if you want to do your clocking.
I think good thing to do would be wait around and hear what this gentleman has to say.
Nick's coming up next.
He's on a roll. But I think this is one of these typical big day cards where in four or five of the races, there's an obvious favorite, and the key is picking out which one or two or three of those is not going to win and jump on that.
In an earlier race, do you think the Monomoy Girl gets beat?
I think she could get beat, but I think she's, you know, obviously a likely winner. That Talk Viv to me, the right. Brissette, is the obvious other horse. And I got to tell you, for those that are thinking, oh, Caledonia Road, you know, can't step right into back into company. I think she's quite eligible to come out running.
To tell you the truth, I didn't even know that she had the prep. That's how much I haven't been following a whole lot of this stuff, and that when I saw that, I said, "Wow!" And then goes back to Mike Smith. They won a Breeders' Cup.
Yeah, the horse ran huge numbers as a 2-year-old. Got one under her belt, wins it. Not like a super fast time, but certainly I think could, certainly could go on and win. So she's the one, and then Talk Vouv to me. Those are the same horses that I agree with you.
Now, there's a lot of California horses in a lot of these races.
I was just about to say
to you. I mean, our whole backside, we walked through, I think I shook everybody's hand on the way in. But Phil D'Amato has a horse in the Acorn, since we're kind of talking about the Acorn. And when he does stuff like this, we mentioned it last week when he won the cowbred race with that lovely Linda, coming off a sprint. And I go, this is odd for him to pass up the allowance race to go along. And when he said, no, I'm going to run her along, it's like, you know what? There's a reason he's running along. Spectators in here. And it's kind of maybe not surprising, but he's not a huge shipper. But he's here. She ran second to Midnight Bijou kind of quietly, backing down the one-turn mile. Might be okay. Now, this is all thinking of Monomoy Girl just doesn't run a race. But you know, Javier stays on, Castellano. I'm gonna throw her in the mix.
Interesting.
I think she's the real deal. Just for him to make the trip, not like him.
Fair enough.
Yep.
Fair enough. Spectator, 8-1. And we should mention, you know, speaking of the filly races, American Gal, we know, is running today. And, in fact, let me check and see if some of the other changes, if the rest of the decisions were made in terms of some of the cross entries, because it really was a bit of a made for a difficult with the FIPS and
I think she was pretty much always going to stay 7/8.
Yeah.
I think she'll go here and then what, the Ballerina and then Breeders' Cup.
And in the Brooklyn, the race after the Acorn, is Outplay the speed? Can that horse get on the front end and just kind of walk the dog?
Let's swing over. I thought the Brooklyn came up kind of fun. He'll be out.
Opportunity, hard study.
No, War Story. You got the defending winner, and there's nothing. If he runs to any of his recent wins.
Right.
Take your guns for Chad and John Gunther. Gunther has got a lot of presence over this entire weekend when it comes to Dino Rosso and to Justify. However, take your guns, a homebred of his that he's retained. And so Gunther with those maroon burgundy jacket with the blue circle, very familiar and been around the game a long time. And
he had a career year.
Yeah, I would say. Yeah. I would say.
He would not be surprised at all.
He's here. Yeah, on hand. And, of course, the Jaipur. And in fact, Peter Miller's presence, Rick, the whole weekend, today, for instance, looking at that True North, is Bobby Abu Dhabi this year's version of Roy H. And there's no reason to think that he won't adjust to any pace scenario. He's 3 for 3, by the way, at 6.5 furlongs, which is a real in-between distance. Not every sprinter that's either a 7/8 sprinter or a 3/4 sprinter necessarily loves 6.5. He does. Bobby Abu Dhabi.
He could do the repeat, absolutely. And then the two horses in here that he's got in the Jaipur, Stormy Liberal and Conquest Tsunami. I mean, they come back from Dubai and they ran good there. They're gonna be fine. You got the Breeders' Cup winner. I mean, I always like Conquest Tsunami a little bit better, and then Stormy Liberal comes up and beats you on the wire. But those two horses, they're gonna be tough to beat. I got to tell you, Peter. When it comes to sprinting, Peter,
that's his thing.
That's his deal.
Yeah,
and he does it well. His horses just. They're on the engine and they go.
Let me get a quick Mick Ruiz thought. I asked Jay Pribman as well regarding Bolt Doro in the Met. And he certainly apparently had that lightning work, the 58 work the other day at Keeneland, then followed it up with a more relaxed effort. He gets some weight, not as much as some people. Old school Met watchers say he should be carrying 110, but I don't know who's going to make 110 other than a bug. But some thoughts in there.
Who wins the last 3-year-old that won this race?
I mean, good question.
I know Holy Bull did, but I Honor and Glory.
Honor and Glory.
There you go.
Good. Holy cow! Thank
so
you.
It's not. It can happen, but it doesn't happen often. Running against some.
And it's not going to happen.
And I don't think it's going to happen today. I mean, Mind Your Biscuits is just a runner. You know, he seems to fire.
He does.
But there's some hard knockers in here. Limousine Liberal. McCracken came back. Kraken. Good Samaritans in here. You know, One Liner is definitely not out of it. A couple of the horses on the outside. Interesting decision by Mick. He was going to run in the Preakness and then maybe he wasn't going to run the Preakness and maybe he did the right thing by freshening the horse up a little bit, taking him to Keeneland and staying out of the action. So he's going to be he'll make his presence felt. He's going to show a little bit. I don't know if he's going to be there at the end, but he's the real deal. I mean, he runs, he's got Justify in his company lines. So that's not a bad thing.
Before we wrap, the pick five, the late pick five, the Naira pick five starts with the 7th tomorrow, and the Woody Stevens, the 3-year-olds. Ken Thacka has turned into something of a 7/8 specialist, and you can basically, I think, track him toward the former King's Bishop, the Alan Jerkins now. And Beautiful Shot turns up in here, Hammer, for DeSormo, and it does feel like he's throwing spaghetti on the wall to see if it's done, but it's in a 12-horse field, and it's an interesting field.
It's an interesting field. We talked about this. We were talking about Keith this morning. He is such a good trainer, conscientious. He loves getting his horses ready. And We talked about the odds discrepancy between Kentanka and Beautiful Shot. One's 3-1, and Beautiful Shot's 20-1. They were three quarters of a length apart last time. So, I mean, if you like Kentanka, I mean, one of those deals, you gotta kind of give Beautiful Shot a chance in here, don't you?
I'm throwing out the last race of Madison Luna, and going to give that one a shot from the fence. See what happens there.
Yeah. But well, Jerry's got Kentanka primed, and he's a 7/8 specialist, and let's see how he does. You beat him for the money.
And the next with the turf race with On Leave and LeCarnell, I guess, in the next race, and then we'll just be waiting for the Wonder Horse to show up.
Well, I'm glad that you finally showed up for a Triple Crown race, because it didn't feel like a Triple Crown season without the two of you in the same place. So I'm glad you're here. We will look forward to tomorrow and even this afternoon. And as always, Hammer, I appreciate it. Jimmy, great to have you back where you belong.
That's it. We're
you're
back
the best.
In the game.
This is you've done another great week, Steve. Thanks. Seriously, thanks. Getting everybody ready.
And for those of you that are just listening, you know, Steve is buttoned up as usual with the tie and the jacket, and he's in the last inning of this big stretch of the Triple Crown. So if you can stand up and clap for him right now, I would, because he's spent, but he does a great job. Great job, Steve.
Thanks so much, Jimmy. Jimmy Ventura, everybody, Rick Hammerly, away they go on your Twitter machine. And
See you in the morning.
Absolutely.
Don't be late.
Back after a break, and Nick Tamaro and Joe Metka, Philly Joe, going to join us, and we'll handicap straight through tomorrow's card. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/RaceLens.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Races about 20 to the top of the hour, and very happy to get Nick Tamaro in. We were going to talk to Nick on Wednesday. We were hoping to do the Thursday and Friday handicapping with Nick, and a Comcast with a quite a remarkable national outage. The most unbelievable thing I've ever seen, that in this day and age, phone service could stop across the country, and it conspired. Nick, did it cost us money yesterday?
Maybe a dollar or two. I think there would have been a little Signore love.
I made up for it. You don't have to worry. There you go,
Steve. I know I can rely on you. You're that guy.
Well, happy to get Nick here as well as Philly Joe, and everybody heard from Joe after the smashing championship victory out at Santa Anita. And Joe,
thanks, Steve.
Nice, right? So cool to get.
He'll take a victory lap here and there.
Absolutely, we have to
every now and then.
Well, let's take a lap, the mile and a half lap around this oval, and we kind of bounced around with the boys, but I want to. We'll start with Belmont, and then we'll jump to the easy goer, and we'll go in chronologic. But let's get the Belmont opinions out on the table. First and foremost, Nick, what are we doing here? I made the case that I don't understand the frenzy to bet Hofberg at 4-1.
Yeah, I think Hofberg was the kind of horse that a lot of people latched onto post-Derby, looking at that replay and seeing some of the trouble that he ran into on the turn and then making that big late move. I caution people yearly against taking deep closers in the Belmont. Now, if you want to tell me that you think Hofberg will be a little bit more tactically ridden, maybe the way he was when he broke his maiden, then that changes things just a bit. But you still have a pace scenario to figure out in this race that really is all based on how quickly Justify gets to the lead and begins to establish the pace. So if you think, like I do, that horses like Bravazo and Noble Indy are going to show some speed out of there and force the issue just a little bit, then that could quicken things up. I don't have a huge opinion in terms of who I want to bet. If I could take the prices that they are on their morning line, I'd bet tenfold. So I felt like he was really thrown into deep waters in the Preakness. I thought he acquitted himself well. I thought he ran a good race. I think he's the kind of horse that certainly is bred to go a mile and a half, being out of by a horse that finished second in the Belmont in Curlin and being out of a Tappet Dam. And, of course, Tappet has produced three of the last four Belmont winners. So I don't think that will be an issue. I think that being lightly raced, being an improved horse, obviously not going to be 26-1, but he's going to be a good enough price to take a little bit of a plunge there. And I'll tell you, the other horses that are going to get on my tickets are Gronkowski and Vino Rosso. I think Gronkowski's a little bit of a wild card. I know he's trained well, and he's the kind of horse that probably will take to a mile and a half quite nicely. And clearly, Todd Pletcher knows how to win this race. So Vino Rosso's the type that I'm very comfortable including, definitely around 8-1 or so.
What would be fair odds on just as a strictly as a win candidate on Justify?
Probably 1-2, 2-5, somewhere in there. He's going to be less than that, I think. Hype over substance in that. And, of course, it's hard to say that about him because there's plenty of substance there, too. But these are, and I'm not going to let 2015 change it, because we sat here 3 years ago and I talked to you about how I was betting against American Pharoah. Looked like an idiot in saying it, but well, that's fine. These are the greatest opportunities of the year in terms of taking what is a short-priced favorite. Now, of course, the issue is how much are you going to press that bet? Are you looking to beat him in a multi-race bet, or are you looking to beat him in the intra-race bets? Because if you get him out of the exact, even out of the trifecta, the potential payoffs just go up exponentially.
And that's always been, at 12 out of the 13 cases, Elliot Walden walking around like he's... It's pretty funny.
It's not easy to have stopped a Triple Crown and now tried to be the manager for a Triple Crown.
It's pretty funny. Victory Gallop, of course, for Elliot, but he's looking all relaxed. 12-1 is the record of betting against Triple Crown
right.
favorites. You've won 12, you've lost once. So whatever you made with Sarava, that'll last you a long time. You can keep betting against Triple Crown horses. Joe Metka, thoughts?
Yeah, I think Nick's right about Justify. I mean, look, I'm going to use him. I think you have to use him. Maybe play some other tickets with maybe some tries without him just to try to pop that big ticket. My fear with Gronkowski, don't you think he's going to be overbet here, Nick?
Probably.
There's
going to be a little name recognition.
Right.
Maybe.
Exactly. I mean, I'm for... I like Tenfold. I like Vino Rosso. Mess around with those horses in the try. Root for Justify, of course, for the Triple Crown. But, I will have tickets where he's... I will have some tries where he's off the board. Just maybe you can make a nice score with it.
I agree, and we brought this up last night, too. Lafitte Benkai and Ellis Starr and I did the Stats Racelens seminar, and we counterbalanced those. I mean, you can like Justify and bet him. You believe, like Hammer, that he absolutely wins. And to me, you then take advantage of... Yeah. The obscurities. I mean, sure. That's how I wrote up the Express Bet thing. I said, don't just get caught into the narrow focus of Bravazo, Hofburg, and Tenfold, because the charts from the last 20 Belmonts are against those horses.
Right. Yeah.
You've got 15 and 20 to 1 shots that populate every try. Virtually from word go. And so, for people who... people are scoffing at Free Drop Billy. Good, go ahead. You got to be kidding. You've got a guy that's finished third four times in this race in Dale Romans with horses that look worse than this horse looks coming in.
Yeah, Free Drop Billy and I had a contract ending last year, and I was going to be on him every race, and I finally... I think he and I have been divorced. He's one of those horses that's very seductive in his morning workouts, very, very sharp every morning. And so you always see positive workout reports, you see positive impressions that he's made. I always felt like he was probably a Belmont type of horse, given that, of course, that damn side pedigree includes Hawkbill, who's a mile and a half winner. But I just don't know if he's progressed as a three-year-old. That's my big concern. I will say he's going to be a big price, and I'm not going to talk anybody off putting a 20, 25 to one shot in there.
Let's turn our attention right from the start of the stakes action, and the easy goer kicks things off, and it really feels like this cast of eight, Nick, that there's stars potentially in the making. We've got a horse like Rugby Man who literally jumped in at the quarter pole to the three-year-old scene. Mask that gets back to doing something I think that's more appropriate for him. We keep reminding everybody, throw out every horse that ran in that Pat Day Mile that basically was like a salmon swimming upstream. So don't worry about anybody that looks ugly from the Pat Day Mile. And Rugby Man and Mask are obviously the two to start the discussion.
Yeah, I only hit ugly races, so it works out perfectly. But Mask was compromised last time. It was a funny race, the Pat Day Mile, because there was a lot of weather that came through, obviously, throughout the day, but it was raining appreciably harder during the Churchill Downs than it was at any other point during the day, and that was a race that had this decided outside flow. The Pat Day Mile was an all-inside race, and obviously Mask was positioned outside. That was his first start coming back from a layoff. Look, he's back home. He's where he wants to be, I think, going a one-turn race at a place like Belmont. It just becomes a question of whether you want to take him at what will be a relatively modest price. I thought High North was interesting enough at what should be a relatively fair price. He's going to be stalking outside, and he might be 6 or 8 to 1. Somebody's going to drift because we all know that breaking the rules is going to take a ton of money in here. This is one of those typical Shug McGahee popular horses with a sexy pedigree and a 2-for-2 record. So I think there's going to be a lot of support for him. I feel like this is one of those races you probably just want to get through in the pick five, and I think you can probably do it with Mask and Rugby Man and High North as main horses, and I'll be using Breaking the Rules and Dark Vader as backups.
Joe.
Yeah, I like High North here. I think his last race was decent. I know Nick was watching the replays this morning. We were talking about it, but yeah, I mean those three horses are the logical ones. I'm leaning more towards High North right now.
Well, and was on hand at Oaklawn for him, and I'm going to obviously use him, cutting back from that. The Peter Pan distance
right.
just seemed a little too far.
Yeah, yes.
Wasn't the right setup either, no. Having to chase.
Turning our attention to the Phipps, and still, I think now we can safely say Highway Star you can take out of the Phipps, as well as American Gal. American Gal runs today, and it does considerably change the cast. Cuts us down to five, and I've come to have a lot of affection for Ivy Bell personally. Some thoughts that Abel Tasman may have woken up after the La Troyenne. We certainly let everybody know to stay away from her in the La Troyenne, that she was no single based on works. Feels like maybe she's kind of coming around after that that bad way to begin her season.
Yeah, well, and you know, it's also very important to remember that she had absolutely no chance in the La Troyenne. So, slow pace, poor start, wide trip, that was not going to happen. That was an inside-dominated race with Salty coming up the rail. More than likely, Abel Tasman needed it. I think we've grown accustomed to seeing Bob Baffert win off of layoffs like that. We've grown accustomed to seeing Bob Baffert win, period. So when he has a horse, especially a good horse, that runs somewhat poorly, I think we're all somewhat shocked by it. So I think she's going to run a much better race. I think that if the Acorn is any indication, then maybe an extended one-turn race is exactly what she's looking for. What I'm interested in seeing is if Ivy Bell surfaced here, not only in part because she drew the inside today, but in part because she's going to make sure there's a little bit of pace in front of Abel Tasman. I understand they have different trainers, but they have the same owner. So I'm not saying she's entered as a rabbit. I'm just saying that she's going to run the race that she's supposed to as a horse stretching out. That's going to set up Abel Tasman quite well. I have to say that in this race, the most surprising entrant to me was Unchained Melody because of how poorly she ran in the Ruffian. And with the blinkers coming off, the fact that Brian Lynch won two yesterday, and that he's just the sharpest guy around, I think, when it comes to this type of move, you have to serve notice because, I mean, I know that their objective this entire year was this race, given what she did in the Mother Goose last year, and she's going to get a similar trip on the lead.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that Unchained Melody. You know, I was looking at the workout reports, and they were showing with the blinkers off and everything else, and I just think... You know, look, it was her first, that Ruffian was her first race back since the Vandoff. You know, give her a pass in that race. And, yeah, I mean, like you said, if they were pointing towards this race, yeah. You know, I think she may have a shot here. I also like Steve's Ivy Bell a little bit also. We'll see. That's some good works.
Ivy Bell's a hard trying horse.
Yeah, that's some real nice works.
Runs her race every time. I don't know necessarily that Unbridled Mo was helped by the slop last time, and maybe she's not a horse that's just kind of figuring things out, so I'm not going to let her beat me in the pick five.
Yeah,
I'm not really dying to bet her, but she seems like a relatively logical horse that if she wins, you're going to feel a little bit dumb and
yeah.
Rip up tickets.
Right.
And you know, to Pletcher, you know, to speak to Pletcher and the unending criticism it seems of that Pletcher receives. These are 5-year-old mares.
Yeah.
For everybody that says that Todd Pletcher can't. Pletcher tomorrow has got not just these two mares. He's also got High Happy, who he's turned into one of the top distance turf horses in the country. So
it's the colts. The colts are the problem.
Maybe
he did get one of these horses 6 months ago too. But I hear you. No, he's done a good job with Unbridled Mo. I mean, she's kind of helped him in a sense that she's obviously been a slower developing horse. And look, I'll always have affinity for her. She won one of the greatest races run in January. One of the greatest races run, period. The Houston Ladies Classic.
The Ladies Classic at Sam Houston Race Park. Let's press forward. Nick, turn back to you. And here is the Acorn. And we were concluding with Hammer and Jimmy about the Acorn. This has been one of my favorite races historically. There's some nice horses in here, but this race is always more fun when there's like 12 or 14.
Yeah, I remember the chaotic one a couple of years ago. There was big long shots.
Champagne Doro, baby.
Champagne Doro.
Still spending
one,
that money.
That's right. In a shoebox, probably. the one that the JMS horse won, that Carolina won. That was, I think, 2015. But yeah, good race. You know, when push comes to shove in this race, I think that what we may end up concluding is that Monomoy Girl is a little bit better than these horses. However, I can't ignore the fact that the pace really does set up for an off-the-pace type, and you want a horse that's going to be making up some ground. I know she looks slow, and there's going to be a lot of people that are very surprised to hear me say it, but I'm going to bet Caledonia Road in this race.
Yeah.
I mean, you no she's
problem
not
with that.
Really gotten a fair opportunity to show whether she's moved forward as a three-year-old. She ran a basically what she had to do last time. She needed to win. She needed to shake some of the rust off. The workout reports are very, very positive on how she's looked since then. And, you know, if you have Moonshine Memory showing speed, you have Monomoy Girl who always wants to be forwardly placed, Star Cloud and Talk Verve to me have only one way to go. And they're going to make sure that this pace gets fast. And at a mile where she can settle and make one run, I'll try Caledonia Road at what will, I think, inevitably be more than her morning line. I know she's the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies winner, but I don't think she goes off 3-1 in this field.
I would agree, because Monomoy Girl is going to suck down the money, and Talk Viv to me is a bit of a mojo filly.
Yeah, definitely. Ran a good race last time.
Yeah. Joe?
Yeah, I don't know how you look much past those two horses. I mean, Monomoy Girl, I don't know if I'm with you on the Caledonia Road, Nick, but we'll see. I mean, I may be the one ripping up tickets, and you're the one happy after that race.
We're going to hope for that Balcony Belmont.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I don't see much going past Monomoy Girl in this race, really. I don't.
Let's turn to the Brooklyn, and of course, this is the race that is the figure maker's friend, given that it gives Andy Beyer and Nick Tamaro and Mark Hopkins and company a race to compare. Even though the Belmont actually isn't run, let's see, the Brooklyn goes
five
off at two,
later.
Yeah, five
yeah,
hours.
Yeah.
So there, you don't necessarily.
If it was up to Andy Mark, it would be run 15 minutes before. So. they would finish and immediately load.
That would turn the tractor into a pace car.
Exactly, right. Yeah, but no, it is helpful, and it's nice to have this race on this card. Look, this race is one of those that's had a little bit of a resurgence, being blown out to a marathon, and we've seen it happen throughout this little Belmont Stakes Festival, which, of course, is a conversation for a different time. For this race, for me, is about two horses that I feel like are made for this trip. Opportunity and Take Your Guns. And I know that you want to be careful with horses that are going to be making up ground at a mile and a half on the dirt. However, each of them is tactical enough to stay within range, especially Opportunity of that pairing. And I do think that Without Play, being a horse that'll set the pace and doesn't really seem all that likely to stay the 12 furlongs, the pace should set up quite well. So I found both to be very interesting. They're going to be kind of my two main horses in here. I'm not going to be beaten by War Story. I'm going to give Outplay and Hard Study at least an opportunity to win and still cash, but the focus of my attention in multi-race plays will be Take Your Guns and Opportunity, and in an intra-race play, we'll be getting one of those two to win.
And I'm right with you, and War Story, of course, out of respect for what he's turned into. And I tell you, he's an underappreciated
horse. He is. Yeah. No, he's danced a lot of dances.
No doubt. Joe, who else? Anybody else?
No, I was going to say Take Your Guns. I know you were talking about him earlier. I can't leave War Story off just because it's just a racehorse. I mean, you know, he shows up when he needs to show up. I'm between Take Your Guns and War Story. I know I'm torn on Opportunity. He's not going to beat me. I'll, of course, have him in my plays. But, those are the three that I think in that race.
War Story should get a very similar trip to the one he did last year when he won this race also. And if he does, then that's going to make him very dangerous. In fact, he probably will get almost exactly the same trip, because if Outplay leaves for position, then Castellano can just keep him sort of right alongside.
Turn to the sixth, and as we do that, let me let you know about some scratches. Scratches came up about 10 minutes ago for the Friday card, and we knew Limousine Liberal was going to try the Met Mile, which actually came as a bit of a surprise. And unfortunately, and I was really looking forward to Joking's return, Joking is scratched. Charlie Baker coming out of the True North. That's the most significant scratches in terms of the late action. Can tell you now the way things shook out between the Philly races on Saturday. We are going to have a five-horse field in today's Bed of Roses. American Gal, Divine Miss Gray, Lewis Bay, Karen, and Highway Star. Those are the five that go today. And concerns that the Phipps was going to scratch down to a small field, allayed, and only American Gal comes out. So we've got a seven-horse edition tomorrow of the Phipps, barring any problems. And I
Six horse Phipps.
Six horse Phipps.
Highway Star.
Highway Star.
And,
yes.
Galaxy.
Yes. I didn't cross out Highway Star. So things balanced. Actually,
yeah,
instead of being uneven, things
well,
ended
Union
up okay.
Well, Union Strike and Shalom coming out didn't help the better roses.
No, it didn't. And there were a lot of people excited about betting Union Strike.
I didn't know why. I don't know why Arnaud Delacourt thought that Shalom didn't fit. He said he needed to run her at Monmouth, so it would be easier. But.
All right, so be it. Let's turn to the Jaipur and yesterday's Intercontinental. A lot of fun. And these 7 furlong, it's one of the nicest things about coming to Belmont is this 7 furlong opportunity. Because the mile has that dog leg as an entry to the turf course. And this is
six.
The six?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, the six. It's 6 furlongs.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The Intercontinental. It was 7 furlongs.
The Intercontinental
7 furlongs. For
that's
a long
right.
Time.
But the Intercontinental.
Right. But you know what? It's you know what is different, and what fits with what you're saying is this is 6 on the Widener, which is different from 6 on the Inner. 6 on the Widener generally is a more forgiving trip for a horse that wants to make an outside move, whereas the Inner Turf, especially with it matted down as much as it is, and the rail being as live as it is, having been at 35 feet last week, there's a big advantage to being inside.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's an ideal trip for basically anybody. I'm of the opinion we didn't talk a lot about today, but Peter Miller didn't come over here for a visit. He sent Stormy Liberal and Bobby Abu Dhabi and even Conquest Tsunami because they're serious racehorses. And Stormy Liberal at 6 furlongs with what should be a pretty ideal trip with a pace in front of him. I mean, I don't really want to take the favorite in this race, but I think between he and Disco Partner, one of them is going to find a way to get there given the way this thing should unfold. I'm respectful of Pure Sensation. I like that Pure Sensation has Kendrick back on him, which means there's pretty much only one way to go. But I don't think he's quite good enough when push comes to shove. And I feel kind of the same way about Blind Ambition and Holding Gold. So I think it really boils down to those two off the pace types. And we'll see if Pocket Change is good enough. I'm not really buying it.
I was just going to say, you're not giving any respect to Pocket Change in here.
He's the kind of horse that would beat me probably at too short a price. But I don't know. I thought he ran against a modest field last time. I know Focus on Me, who he beat, came right back and beat Pure Sensation, but I thought Pure Sensation was ridden a little.
Yeah, well, this is going to be his biggest test, and we'll see what he can do. I like Pure Sensation. I think Carmouche back on is a huge, huge
play.
They're going
to do what they did 2 years ago.
Yeah.
There's going to be one run and gun. That's it.
Right.
There's going to be
right.
no choice. Jason Service is about 75% in turf sprints, too, so I'll probably be the one with egg on my face. Won't be the first time.
The Woody Stevens starts the Naira Betts Pick 5 and carry over today in the Pick 5. And this group of 12 has got all the elements you like at this time of year. You've got horses that gave up their pursuits of classics like Strike Power and World of Trouble to some extent, even still having fun. All the horses returning to one turn, they kind of jump off the page. Engage Madison Luna in terms of one turn opportunity. You got California Invaders. Kenthaka has become a seemingly a 7 furlong specialist and seems to really like the trip. Dale Roman's got promises fulfilled that has been shown flashes all along. Nick, pace scenario and who's bettable here?
People are going to laugh, but we were talking about Free Drop Billy before in the Belmont. Free Drop Billy was my horse. He'd be in this race. I think that the one turn with a pace in front of him, and I love cutbacks in this race.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had this conversation every year. The problem is the two big turnbacks in this race are speed turnbacks, and Strike Power and Promises Fulfilled don't really have that profile of a horse that wins what looks like it's going to be a fast-paced race, because you have the Tabulator and World of Trouble who will also be showing speed. World of Trouble is in the same boat, being a horse cutting back. I know that Give Me a Minute is a horse that benefited probably from being towards the inside in the Pat Day Mile. I have to take any horse that's going to settle back and make one run. So I'm interested in him. I know that the time on the turn back to bet Still Having Fun was last time, but I'm betting Still Having Fun again, who made really one of the only off-the-pace moves on that entire Preakness card, coming down the middle of the track to run second behind Matoli, and I think we were confused a little bit by the fractions in that race, have now come to find out they weren't nearly as fast as we thought, and this is a horse who actually rallied into a relatively moderate pace. So having Rosario, who's a guy who is really exactly who you want when you're talking about a drop-back, one-run type race, I have to use him at what should be a big price. I wish Madison's Luna didn't draw the rail. I think that 7/8 in a fast-paced environment is really what he wants as well, but unfortunately, he has to try and overcome that. And I just really am not moved by the favorites in here. I don't care for Engage. I thought he was very underwhelming in what was a weak three-horse field, and I just wonder if World of Trouble and Strike Power don't end up kind of canceling each other out. I also feel like Kenthaka has two wins at 7 furlongs at Santa Anita where things could not have possibly gone better. Getting a gigantic pace set up when he beat Axeman back in February, and then getting one of the most perfect trips you'll ever find, sitting right behind the lead last time in the Las Barrera.
Is it? Yeah, Joe?
Yeah, no, I one horse you didn't... I give a little, I don't know, maybe I'm way off, but maybe a little bit of Beautiful Shot in here. I don't know. I thought his last race was decent. I don't know. I'm really torn on this race. I know the favorites are, I think they're very vulnerable here. Yeah. I'm not in love with Engage, and you're 100% right with Madison's Luna with getting the rail, I think is going to be the death for that horse. But I don't know. I'm taking some shots. I like Beautiful Shot. We'll see if she can run back to that last race, see what she can do.
Speaking of shots, why is Pure Shot being run here? This does not. This doesn't feel like an Asmussen move to come back 3 weeks after the performance in the Chick Lang. The turf sprint didn't work at opening night at Churchill. I it's a question I always ask myself: why is he here? And certainly the Asmussen barn could ship this horse to any number of far-flung sprint stake opportunities, but you come here to run against these heavy heads?
Yeah, and having an inside post and the blinkers going on, I think we kind of know what's going to happen, too. So this is a horse that will probably be forwardly placed as well, and maybe they were hopeful that with the speed being the cutting back type, that they might just be a little quicker with that first step and could potentially take them a little farther than we would think. He did not run poorly at all last time either. Probably was a little too close to the inside, which was not ideal at all the entire afternoon at Pimlico. So you could do worse than to leave him in there to maybe catch a piece at 30-40 to 1.
And you cross out the turf race, and even if you say mud, he didn't particularly run well chasing in the mud at Oaklawn to start the 3-year-old season. But you know, take a look at the dry fast performance at Oaklawn. You know, when he cleared the first condition, and even his maiden win at Saratoga, which I frankly have forgotten about at 23-1.
Yeah, this feels like it has the potential to be a very random result. So this is the kind of horse you want to be open to.
They just put him on the lead and try to go?
I think so. From the two with the blinkers going on, I don't think they have really any choice.
Right. Just gun him and see what happens. Yeah. And see. Yeah.
It's also a horse bred. I tell you one thing about this. Fast Bullet, obviously, who was an absolute speedball and a True North winner. And I can't remember seeing a darn that alarm mare on a pedigree line. I can't remember the last
time. Sunshine State action there. This is a horse you would almost expect to be in the...
Well, it's a McCaffin. The McCaffins bred this horse, and they still have a piece. Scott Dilworth and Norma McCaffin.
The race at Gulfstream would have made sense later in the month, so there's a reason why he's here.
I'm telling you, why are they here? And that's a question it doesn't ever hurt to ask, not just on a day like tomorrow. The Just a Game, let's talk about some of the turf action, and boy, you want to talk about line gather the usual suspects. It feels like we've seen these a million times, and isn't that why A Raving Beauty stands out?
Yeah, fresh face, really, really strong Bogey performance. Generally, that's a race that has horses in it that need to prove themselves to be grade one caliber. She certainly does not need to after that race, and it was due time for Chad Brown to get a good European import. It felt like it had been 15 minutes or so since he had one. So nice for that to happen. We'll see a couple of them, I guess, in the latter half of this card between she and Robert Bruce. You know, the one thing I think that you ask yourself in handicapping this race is it possible for Lull to sneak away from this field? The Just a Game is a race that's been won wire to wire before. We've certainly seen it happen. There's really not anybody in here that's going to force her along unless they maybe get back to the pace stalking tactics that they had previously with La Cornell. I don't know what the hell happened last time with La Cornell and what that idea was, but that certainly was never going to work. We've seen Chad Brown horses at short prices be vulnerable when they're in negative pace situations, and that might be the only thing that causes a problem for both A Raving Beauty and Off Limits. And if that occurs, then to me, if there's somebody that gets the best of this field on the front end, the only option is Lull.
Don't you think On Leave maybe goes?
I just think On Leave It have to be ridden like a quarter horse to keep up.
Okay.
Because Lull is fast. So you have two choices, right? You could go the Tappet's Fly route, and you could put a 46 half on the board and say, I'm going to run all of you off your feet. Or they could try and actually play possum a little bit and maybe back it down to a 47 and change and try and sprint home. I always, okay, with a speed horse, I always want the former. I want them to just bottom everybody out.
Right.
Not altogether different from what Celestine did in a way 2 years ago when she sat close to a fast pace and just everybody keeping up with them made them work that much harder. So it being a smaller field and having Jose Ortiz, I don't love that they passed a couple of opportunities with Lull coming out of that race, but clearly this was always their intention, and her two races at Belmont previously certainly don't lead you away from her.
Yeah. Yeah, I like I said, that was just my only question with the on leave, what they were going to do. I don't know. I think, yeah, I can see your point on Lull and on a Raving Beauty. I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to go deep here.
No, Chad really Brown's not. Never had a Euro bounce problem. I guess the other horse worth mentioning, of course, is Proctor's Ledge, because you get her away from Keeneland, she's a different horse. And it will not take a hell of a lot more than she put forth last time to win this race.
Well, and she's been in search of this grade one. That's the last piece of the puzzle for Brendan Walsh. And
one of the best non-grade one winners in racing, that's for sure.
Well, and I'm glad you brought her up, because it makes me remind folks that tomorrow and Sunday, Mrs. Mosley makes me think of Suffolk Downs and two terrific cards.
Yeah,
that
Lou
Raffetto. Tremendous pair of cards.
Yeah. No, that's true.
First weekend at Suffolk, there'll be a big crowd there. Certainly tomorrow, there's been big crowds every one of these weekends. So get out to Suffolk.
Good set of silks Mrs. Mosley has.
You like?
I like them. I think they're sharp.
Well, Mrs. Mosley is an institution up in Boston, and she'll win. I mean, she's like the last of the Massbreds. Although, you know what? We're not. You ever been to Great Barrington?
I have not, but it's on its way back.
I haven't been.
You'll love Great Barrington.
I could find my way to be.
You
New
will
England
love
for
Great Barrington.
A day or two.
Let's talk about the Metropolitan Handicap, and people kind of. I've heard both sides of the coin, Nick. I've heard people waxing poetic about it, and then people deriding the field. It's a fun, eclectic group.
It is. It's, I don't know what the expectation is for what should be in here. I think we have a good balance of routing types that are cutting back to the mile. We have some sprinters that are stretching out. I was very surprised, personally, that Limousine Liberal ended up here. I understand that they probably want to get him to be a grade one type horse. I also think that his presence in here does affect the way the race could unfold, because he's probably going to show some speed stretching out. And being in the three hole, I don't know really what else they could do, because honestly, everybody who was talking about Bolt Doro being some kind of one-way speed horse off of these fast workouts, I don't see how he was going to keep up with B Jersey early. And I actually thought B Jersey was going to wire this field. So, because I think B Jersey is a horse that they've made it, it's become clear he has one way to go. He needs to be on the lead, dictating terms, just that simple. I think between he and Mind Your Biscuits, you're probably going to find the winner among those two. Now, I'll say that there's no way for me to potentially be sicker sitting in this grandstand tomorrow than to watch McCracken win this race. Because I've been, I've been begging for McCracken to go a one-turn mile for basically his entire career. So he looks slow on paper. He's going to need to improve, but I think that was a good starting off point for him last time. And he's too good a horse to not be able to step up at some point. So both he and Good Samaritan are kind of in the same boat for me. They're routing types that need that. I think the mile for Good Samaritan is actually a really good trip as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll definitely use both prominently. And we'll, of course, show Mind Your Biscuits the respect that he deserves, being that he's not only run some of his best races here, but he's run some of his best races fresh, and he should get a good setup.
Yeah, I agree with you there, Nick. I mean, I really like B Jersey. I think he's going to try to. You're right. He's one run. He has to go to the lead. He has to dictate what's going on. I also like Mind Your Biscuits. I've always liked that horse. I think it's Mind Your Biscuits and B Jersey. I know we had that conversation about McCracken yesterday. I feel the same way. I don't want to be the one not having him on the ticket when he crosses the wire. So
awesome, Slew kids.
Awesome Slew is an absolute professional at finding somebody who's just a little bit better than him. He is a very, very good horse that's run a number of very, very good races. But you look through his PPs and you look at the horses who've beaten him. They're all good. There's no question about it. I think that the mile is good for him, too. I still think 7/8 is really ideal. But, it's he'll find somebody in the forego that he'll probably run second to and continue to collect money. And I think he'll be a good Florida Stallion in a couple of years.
Well, this could make him a Kentucky Stallion. And he comes into it really on a very nice ascendancy as a 5-year-old. And Mrs. Weber's breeding program lends itself to mature horses. Mature horses.
Yeah, I agree.
And this is an awesome again out of a Seeking the Gold mare that has been unbelievably productive for Charlotte. And I think tomorrow is the day.
This was a horse who needed to go one turn the whole time.
I agree.
Look at how good he's done since they did.
Exactly.
Cassies have done a good job.
Exactly. So not that Eddie didn't do a good job.
No, he did.
Just that as a 3-year-old, you wanted, there were certain things you wanted to flesh out at that time.
Look, he got a grade 3 route win with him as a 3-year-old. There's nothing wrong with that.
The Manhattan, and it, with all the fun things to talk about over the weekend, and with the Triple Crown try, and the Met, and the 3-year-old, and the bib, this is as nice an edition of the Manhattan as you could pull together.
Yeah, I agree, and I think this is a good opportunity from a wagering perspective, because I don't know if Beach Patrol showed that he might be on his way out last time. I know that it was a comeback race, it was off a layoff, and it was a boggy turf course, but he did not look like he had any of that authority that he had at the end of last year. So there might be some vulnerability. Maybe the biggest threat to him is his stablemate, Robert Bruce, who was very, very
the horse with two first names.
Winning, exactly. Winning the Fort Marcy last time. I know that the horses coming back from the Man of War all have that stamina edge, but I wasn't particularly taken by High Happy. I thought he's had kind of controlled pace setups and trips in his last two starts. A mile and a quarter is probably a little short for Saddler's Joy, who'll get the engines going a little late. The interesting horse to me from a price perspective is Channel Maker, who a mile and a quarter is probably ideal, and he didn't have the best of trips last time at Churchill. Kind of had to weave in and out in upper stretch, so he'll be a price. I think he's one you want to throw in, and depending on how you feel about the Belmont, whether you want to get alive in some doubles, or obviously most people are going to be playing the pick 4, even the pick 6, Nyer Betts pick 5 if you're on track or a Nyer Betts customer, you probably want to be as deep as you can, especially if you're of the persuasion that Justify is a horse you can really lean on.
Can Spring Quality do anything from, or is that that?
It's a crappy post position, but he's a dangerous horse. In fact, I wrote Bick next to him because you touted him when he won the Red Smith last year, and I knew. And look, his comeback race to Robert Bruce was not bad. And I think we all, it's funny, there are two horses running this weekend I think that we're all a little nervous about because of their trainers and because of what happened last year, right? And Bobby Abu Dhabi's won because of Roy H, and Spring Quality's won because of Ascend. So are we going to allow Graham Motion to win the Manhattan at 20-1 again? Probably not.
I don't know if you noticed this. How about Graham Motion sending horses to Belmont and having Edgar come up and ride?
He's very loyal to Edgar.
He's very loyal to Edgar.
You know, in these 95 polls that Andy Serling has put out, you realize how many of these big races Edgar Prado won between 2001 and 2006 also.
Well, and this is Edgar's regular mount for a while, and it is notable. Edgar's come into town 8 times. He hasn't had a win at the meet.
But he's nibbled.
He's got 4 seconds and 3/3.
Yeah. Yeah, and look, I mean, obviously, we're not talking about Edgar Prado circa 2005, but to me, what he was always best with was any kind of horse with speed on the grass. So this is a horse that'll be forwardly placed. I'm not going to allow him to beat me, and I think anybody who's dying to bet Robert Bruce is probably risking it by throwing out Spring Quality.
What about High Happy in here?
I don't love him. I know I probably have a little bias against horses that really take off at Gulfstream, and he did come back. He won in workmanlike fashion.
Yeah.
So I think that the horses he's facing in here from top to bottom are better than what he's facing his last two starts.
I agree with that.
That's my only knock.
Well, there's no doubt, and that's also, you can also make that same statement about One Go All Go, but at the same time you look up and down and there's more speed in here than Scooter wanted to see.
Right.
But one thing that he has done effectively is basically gut any speed horse that wants to chase him.
Yeah.
Because he extends them every time somebody makes a run at him on the backstretch or on the turn, they end up at the back of the chart.
Right.
No, the third turn is always helpful for him, too, because he can get a little separation in that portion of it. So, yeah, I know he's a dangerous horse, and when you're a speed horse and your trainer's nickname is Scooter,
I've got
one way to go.
I think it's going to be a fun race, especially with Robert Bruce. I always want to call him Robert the Bruce because I owned a harness horse that was named Robert the
Bruce.
There
you go.
So
that's great. Yeah. That's great. Manitoulin is going to be a crazy price.
Yeah, he'll be a big price. He's probably not good enough, but you know, can he sneak in there at a little bit of a number? He was compromised by the slow pace last time in the Fort Marcy. So I think you could do a lot worse, and there was really no way he was going to rally into a 33 and one final 3/8. So, we'll have to see. It's a good bunch. It's a very exciting Manhattan, and I think you're going to have a 5-2 favorite or so, 3-1 favorite, and that's going to open up a lot of possibilities at the windows.
Before we adjourn and bring Ed DeRosa in with James Scully back in Kentucky. Anything from today?
Playing the one horse name per race game for today,
or just you could do that if you want on the late action.
Late action, one horse per race.
Yeah, real quick.
10th race.
10th.
Funny kid.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, if not funny kid,
I'm
calling
up now.
Absolutely.
Where are we at here?
Joe, this is the Philly Joe Longshot special. Cooptato.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right there.
Yeah, he's going to be in the winner's circle with Tom Morley if that's the case. I got a real groundbreaking one for you in the New York, Sister Charlie.
Yeah,
how do you go? How do you go?
I'll use a little Holy Helena, but Sister. Yeah. I mean, Sister Charlie's race at Keeneland was
scary
scary
good. And and I'm not going to let Four Star Crook.
No,
I'm not going to let the other Chad scenario beat us.
Right.
The True North ends up really different. I got to rework my thoughts because of Joking, who I wanted to get in, but I ended up picking Bobby Abu Dhabi. But Westwood, we're not getting 6-1 on Westwood.
I thought Westwood ran. I thought when they turned for home in the Run Happy, I thought he was going to win by 3. I thought he was a little bit workmanlike late. I thought he ran well. He's a progressive horse. I think he'll get the right trip stalking outside. I actually wanted to bet Always Sunshine coming out of it. I thought he was more on the 3-wide chase. And this might be a scenario where he's able to drop back and make one run. You know, I'm also a little worried that Recruiting Ready is going to blast out from the rail and take these horses longer than people think. This is kind of a Mike Smith special. It's a one-way speed horse that he's going to put on the lead.
What did you do in the opener in the pick five where people are going to need help? That is a absolute skull buster, if ever there was one. A mile on the turf, first level allowance. Raging Bull is going to be a short price, and I think he's a suspect.
I wish that he probably would have run in a stake race like he was supposed to.
That's
but boy,
what,
if this pace unfolds like it's supposed to, he's going to win.
My question is, if he's the way I wrote it, if he's the nuts, why isn't he in a stake race?
No, I know. Well, Chad would have scratched him from the James Murphy because it was run in a bog, and he could have been in the Penn Mile. But Chad doesn't really love to ship to Penn National, so that's my only guess. And I mean, Peter Brandt probably needs one other than wins as bad as anything else, I suppose. So I don't know. It's a big, big day for Peter Brandt.
How about that maiden race to start the day, the 6th, that starts the pick 6 carryover, where there's a bunch of horses that should have broken their maiden already, and like Orbed, which is Buzz Belair's very nice purchase, and has knocked on the door repeatedly, has run at least 2 races fast enough to win almost any maiden special weight anywhere.
Now, this is a really, really, really good maiden race.
Right? Yeah. And there's some firsters that you've got to figure out, and Illudere of Jimmy Jerkins is working up a storm. That's the other Jerkins. You've got Fall Star for Chad Brown after a turf try coming back to the main. This is ridiculous. I ended up picking Kieran McLaughlin, that Barahin.
He got scratched, unfortunately, but that was
I didn't see that.
Sort of universally Hold tipped it. In his debut.
And you have the Clement first. They're all the Clement Luna Faze.
Well, had the Chad Brown firster is a half to go in for Brown.
Oh, and El Cucuy.
El Cucuy also.
El Cucuy.
Which is a very underrated great name, being that the El Cucuy in Spanish is the boogeyman. So Eric Guillo would train a horse named the boogeyman. This is an interesting race. Encinitas ran a very sneaky good race in his debut. Was very wide after getting off slowly. Didn't take any money. Felt like a horse that would benefit from having a start. Falstar obviously only runs by appointment only. But look at the horses he ran into in his first two starts.
Yeah.
Was not on the proper part of the racetrack either time as well. Can't really hold against him finishing second to West Coast. Orbed obviously makes sense with Ajnadine coming back yesterday, improving his buyer figure by 4 points and nearly winning a one other than. Illudere is an interesting horse. A little bit of a cheap purchase for Centennial, and a horse that's taken a little bit of time to get here, but apparently he's working well. I'll tell you this much. Write this horse's name down if he ever gets to the turf. The second dam is a half to Shorwan, who won $1 million on the turf for Hal Wiggins, including multiple runnings to Sam Houston.
We used to talk about Shorwan.
That is a very, very nice horse.
I'm using him today. He's been working against Secretary at War and Rocketry and holding his own.
Which says quite a bit. I think as far as this pick six shakes out, looking at it from an overhead perspective, you're going to rely on Raging Bull. You're going to rely on Sister Charlie. You're going to go deep here. You're going to go deep in the True North because any of those five, six remaining horses could potentially win that race. You're probably going to rely on the 2 Euros in the Belmont Gold Cup, and you're going to try and get alive to 4 or 5 in the last race, which is pretty wide open. So it's not as daunting as it seems if you really can single a couple of horses, and the main portion of my play is going to be singling both Raging Bull and Sister Charlie.
As always, appreciative. Philly Joe.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Thanks for being here. Nick Tamaro. Are you in the challenge? Are you playing the challenge? You are.
Yep.
You're playing.
Yeah.
Joe's a big contest guy now.
I know. Now he's a celebrity.
Oh, yeah.
He's a major player. He's a macher, as we say.
You know, when these guys snuck out of nowhere in the U.S. Open and won, they had to go keep playing. They didn't want to be a one-hit wonder. So. No, Joe, be there. Yeah. This kicks off the summer. This is when the summer contests really get going. So it's a big one.
When you hit stride.
56 people in this one.
Nice. That's all right.
Yeah.
That's manageable. That's
a
manageable size.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So. Hopefully we're talking to you next Friday about it.
Absolutely.
Hopefully we're talking to you Monday about it.
Monday even.
Yeah,
pay for thrills. If you're not following Joe Metka, you're making a mistake because Joe's the fun. It's the fun bunch.
He's the brains of the operation.
And Joe's the linchpin. Joe finds the fun, and the others trail along. And of course, you've got. The scales are getting tipped again in about 6 weeks when Pete Cummings returns, right?
You know, it's Twitter official now, so he is on his
He's
way
coming back.
Back
home.
And America both smiles and weeps. Interchangeably.
Unbelievable.
Now, it'll be fun to have Pat back. In fact, we'll probably have him here in a year or so, and we'll see.
He's doing all what? 3 years?
So. Well, it'll basically be an audience with Pat.
So, well,
you know, it'll be
no comment.
Right. They said in A Bronx Tale, "You're never with Pat; you're among him."
Fantastic.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
Guys. Joe and Nick, and we'll take a break. Might be our last of the morning. Ed DeRosa standing by, and Scully back in Kentucky, and we'll do the same exercise, get their plays for tomorrow. And I see where Scully's got a couple of price ideas that are up, and then Marshall Graham and company making an appearance as well. And we'll have to get – we got to get Marshall on once Triple Crown season's over, talk some business. Marshall with a very strong discussion out of Preakness Week about breakage, and it feels like one of the next topics that could really benefit horse players in the industry. I brought it up yesterday with Steve Crist, in fact, so we're going to get a Marshall Graham conversation when we can. Right now, break here, Scully and DeRosa, and then a visit right here from Lafitte Benkai III, LP3, will join us as well. Before we close out, and we'll even try to reach out and get other regulars. I thought I would see Seth Merrill by now, but no. And we certainly hope to see everybody at King Umberto's tonight or tomorrow night. And you can try my dish debuts tonight. The pork bourguignon debuts tonight. It's got a 3-night run, an exclusive 3-night run. If it sells out, it may become a permanent addition to the menu. We'll see. Bick's pork bourguignon. Back after this, Ed DeRosa and James Scully.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get 5 full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for 5 of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multitrack today.
The thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer-Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer-Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.